This is Olympic champion Scott Hamilton. Yes, the real Scott Hamilton. And you're listening to the other Scott Hamilton show, where you should be entertained, informed, and maybe even amused. Just don't expect any backflips. I mean, have you seen him skate?
Let's ask our guest. He covers the NFL for Yahoo Sports. Eric Edholm, happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you. What's going on?
Well, you tell me, brother. It looks like a lot of guys are out after testing positive for COVID. The NFL, I'm sure, scrambling to figure out what it's going to do with its schedule. What do you predict them?
Yeah, I mean, we might see another week of chaos, or at least of, you know, certain teams probably being affected a little bit more than others. And, you know, teams like the Ravens have been through a lot. And obviously we saw the Saints last night and what they've had to, you know, do with their lineup and their quarterback position, obviously. So, you know, it's hard to really make predictions because, you know, at this point, now that they've kind of altered the protocols a little bit and tried to make it a little easier for vaccinated players to return if they're asymptomatic and things like that. I mean, how much can you really do? I mean, you can try to shuffle the deck and move games by a day or two, but, you know, at some point you're still kind of kicking the can down the road a little and you know, pushing things, you know, into an uncomfortable spot for the next week. So, you know, I really don't know what the end result is going to be, but I mean, I think the good news from what I've been able to gather from either reading local reports or, you know, sort of seeing the big landscape is that, you know, most players don't seem all that ill, right? I mean, they may have symptoms for a day or they may not have any at all. The NFL is largely vaccinated, which is a good thing for, you know, mitigating those. And, you know, I mean, that's the good news from a health standpoint, but from an availability standpoint, based on the current testing rules and everything, I mean, it's going to be limiting in some ways.
You know, Eric, I'm looking now at what the NFL has mandated for media covering playoff games going forward, and they're saying that all members of the media must have a COVID-19 booster shot by January 12th, but there are some exceptions. This one actually caught my eye. An individual who is not eligible for a booster pursuant to the CDC definition. So I don't understand. You don't have to get a shot if you don't follow this, but wouldn't you still be able to spread the virus? I mean, neither of us are medical experts, but that right. seems to me to be kind of a massive loophole.
Well, exactly. I mean, this is the issue I raised at the time. Like, you know, you could have your vaccines, but because it's COVID positive, you know, and this is going back months now, you could walk into a, you know, an NFL facility or whatever. I mean, okay. Are we saying that, you know, that vaccinated people don't spread the virus? I think we know that not to be true right now. So, I mean, I could go on for about 20 minutes on this one. I feel like we've been sort of, you know, rehashing the same debate in different forms for about 19, 20 months now. But, yeah, I mean, it really – I don't think there's a good way to completely shut this thing down. I think we've learned, like, you know, the harder we try, it's like quicksand, right? The harder we fall. So I don't know what the answer is. And obviously covering the Super Bowl, where you have more of a confluence of media people, you know, athletes, you know, other people, everybody congregating into one spot is going to be a real challenge. But I did, you know, sort of peek at the South Africa numbers, which is believed to be either ground zero or one of the first places where Omicron started, and the numbers are dropping off significantly. That's good news, I think, and I hope that in 2 or 3 weeks following the holiday crush, and look, my family was affected by COVID this week. I mean, you know, we're not immune to it, obviously. The hope is that by then, a lot more people will have kind of burned through this thing and that, you know, the wave will have crested a little. But, again, that's largely relying on hope. We know how that goes.
We're joined by Eric Edholm, Yahoo Sports. Follow him on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. And, Eric, it takes a lot for the NFL to postpone games, and it takes a disaster for the NFL to even consider canceling games. Two-part question. Can you see a situation in which the league cancels some meaningless games between teams without playoff hopes? And how much flexibility do you think the NFL has with regard to pushing the playoffs back, Super Bowl, all that, deeper into February, perhaps even to March?
Yeah, I don't think we're not going to March, I can tell you that, right? I mean, the NFL calendar is built a certain way where I think they have a little bit of flexibility with some of this stuff. You know, we have, like, for instance, a Monday playoff game this year, and so obviously they've already changed that for TV purposes, and I'm sure there can be an alteration for, you know, for COVID purposes as well. But I really don't see playoff games getting delayed too much, if at all. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little bit naive about this, but I really don't see them pushing the Super Bowl back unless something really drastic happens. And I'm not talking about just, you know, a big increase of positive cases, which is what we've seen the last 2 weeks. I would be surprised if that continues going up at the rate it has the last 2 weeks. It just doesn't seem terribly possible, but you never know, right? I mean, I guess they were sort of saying that we're talking about like 20% of the league has tested positive or what have you in the last you know, few weeks here. So I know I'm kind of rambling here, and it's hard to imagine that actually happening. I suppose worst case scenario, you have to be open to the idea, but I don't think we're delaying the Super Bowl by a week or two or anything like that this year.
Eric, I'm looking at the number of players right now just for the Carolina Panthers who have tested positive. That number is now up to 14, and these aren't just nobodies. I mean, you're looking at a Shaq Thompson. You're looking at a Brian
right.
Burns. I mean, at what point does the NFL maybe start changing its rules with regards to roster sizes? I mean, is that let me phrase it like this, Eric. Going forward into 2022, can you see an announcement between now and, say, July where the NFL says, you know what, we're going to start keeping 80-man rosters and make sure everybody's covered. The practice squad is going to get bigger. We're going to give you more leniency with moving guys up and down. How much do you see that changing over the next 6-7 months?
We'll never get to an 80-man roster. I think the fear of the NFL would be that once you go there, you're never going back, right? And they don't want roster sizes that large, right, for competitive reasons and whatnot. And the practice squad element, you know, they've already expanded it, and that's I think been a very successful tool as far as at least having guys in the building, going, you know, getting them through the, you know, the initial testing protocol, you know, getting them somewhat familiar with the offense/defense, what have you, and then being able to kind of call them up when needed. I mean, that's been a successful tool. You know, as much as a Band-Aid is successful when you gash your arm, right? I mean, you need it. It doesn't, you know, exactly solve the problem, but it helps a little bit, right? So I just don't see it going up that dramatically. Could there be a roster increase? Sure. I don't think it's going to happen, like you said, until the 2022 season. At this point, you know, the union and the league would be scrambling to try to figure out how those rules work. You know, will it benefit one team more favorably than another? You know, you worry about the fairness of it and all that. It took the NFL and the league to, I think, what, July 22nd or something last year to come up with the, you know, the official protocols for the season and how they're going to be changed and everything. What they probably should have done was, and it's really impossible to ask them to do it, but to come up with a plan B or a sliding scale or a way to adjust things on the fly a little bit more seamlessly. You know, this is obviously hindsight 2020. You know, there's no way to have predicted that, you know, that this would have been the exact result of where we'd be right now with a more transmissible variant of the virus, but one that most likely, at least the early data shows, isn't affecting people. It's less virulent. So I guess the idea is that anything is possible in 2022. You have to be prepared for every possible scenario, best, worst, and everything in between. And it's just going to take a lot of work. And I think that the league, in a weird sort of way, has almost had more issues in the last couple of weeks than they did over, you know, a big stretch of last year, which was supposed to be the complete trial by fire. It's weird to say that, but these weeks have been very challenging for the league.
Yeah, that was actually my next question, Eric. I mean, I'm wondering how prepared the NFL is for what it's dealing with right now, because it has been, I hate to use the word normal, I guess it's the new normal, but it seemed like the old normal for most of the past 3 months. Is the NFL prepared, I guess, is our question for this whole interview. Is the NFL prepared for what it's experiencing right now?
Is the CDC prepared for it? You know, is the government prepared for it? I don't mean this isn't a political statement. I just mean that it's almost impossible to predict what's coming next, right? I mean, we can, you know, talk to epidemiologists and virologists and try to guess what the models show about what, you know, the next variant might be or what the next development might be in COVID. And so I suspect, and this is just my wild guess, I have no idea, that a year from now we won't be talking about this. That's my best guess. Not because people are tired of talking about it, but because attitudes will have adjusted a little bit, I think, and expectations about, you know, the number of positive cases and things like that. I mean, it's worth reminding that, like, Jared Goff a couple weeks ago said, you know, I was tested for COVID, I was negative, but I had a flu, and a bad flu, but I was allowed to come back into the facility without restriction. He said, you know, to me, and again, this is a kid who went to Cal, is a smart guy, right? He's sort of questioning, like, you know, I realize that the flu and COVID are two different animals, so two different stages of development or whatever, but, you know, why is this attitude different for one than the other? When, you know, death rates for Omicron are technically lower than what the annual flu death rates are and things like that. So, again, not having any idea what people's attitudes are going to be on this thing 12 months from now, 8 months from now, whatever, I have a feeling that we're not going to be in the sort of same headspace, and that I don't know that we're going to be cavalier about the whole thing, but I just sort of feel like there's only so much planning you can do to try to predict where, you know, the health and safety guidelines for the country are going to be at, you know, even a month or two from now, much less 12 months from now. So on the one hand, I'm saying, boy, they got to be prepared for anything. And on the other, I'm saying, who the heck knows where we're going to be as a country health-wise, even, you know, a short amount of time down the road.
Just a couple more minutes with Eric Edom of Yahoo Sports. And Eric, let's shift gears a little bit, and I'm going to stay in the who the heck knows category, and I'm going to ask you this question. The Panthers are 2-10 since starting off 3-0, and we're trying to figure out here in our corner of the Carolinas what the heck is going on. Do they know what the heck is going on? Are they in the middle of a rebuild, or are they under the delusion that they can actually win? I'm of the mind that that 3-0 start was the absolute worst thing could happen to Carolina this year. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was impressive on both sides of the ball, or at least certainly defensively early on, where, you know, I mean, looking back to who they play, the Jets, the Saints, and was the Texans also, I think they started with. Yeah. I mean, you know, clearly those aren't three of the most explosive offenses in the league, but I think you're right. I mean, maybe it did give them a false sense of security, but, you know, competitive against Dallas and Minnesota and some other teams along the way, and you sort of felt like, okay, you know, you could see a path to where this team is competitive, but the losses start racking up and the performances against the better teams in the league. And then, you lose badly against the Giants. That was maybe the first sign of real trouble where you thought, okay, this is more than just a quarterback issue for this team. And obviously Christian getting hurt and, you know, various other absences along the way. But to me, the big question is the future of the quarterback position and then the future of Matt Rhule. You know, you start with those and you work backward, I think, or work down from there. I mean, what do they truly think of Sam Darnold? What do they truly think of Cam Newton? You know, what's the plan for Rhule and his staff? Do they have a permanent solution at offensive coordinator? You know, until we get some sort of clarity on those issues, it's really hard to know what the next step is going to be. My guess is that the owner is growing impatient. This is going to be, what, year number four now, where they've failed to reach 500 under his watch? I could be wrong, four or three. I don't remember exactly when he bought the team. But, you know, that's got to be for a guy who is, I think, has always had a pattern of success based on high expectations being met in his previous business dealings. This would go down as a pretty large failure in his mind. So does that lead to sweeping changes? I really don't know. What quarterbacks are available, right? Do we know Deshaun Watson's status? Do we know where Aaron Rodgers stands right now? Russell Wilson? You know, the draft options don't seem all that appealing, especially after a year in which the draft was supposedly great and the rookie quarterbacks have been a decidedly mixed bag. I mean, that's a lot of unknowns right now for a team that I think is prepared to do what it takes to upgrade at that position if possible.
Carolina Panthers are 22-41 with David Tepper as the owner.
There you go. And is that bad? I mean, okay, I knew it was, I knew it was low. I didn't know it was quite that bad. So that paints a picture right there, you know?
And, Eric, I'm going to leave you with this thought, and I would like to hear your response. I don't know if – I mean, it's a Matt Rhule issue. It's definitely a Matt Rhule issue because I consider the general manager spot to be the most glaring hole in the organization, Scott Fritterer. I mean, Scott Fritterer's experience did not warrant him being a general manager, and he was basically handpicked by Matt Rhule. And it seems to me that it's Matt Rhule who is in charge of making the personnel decisions and not so much his alleged boss, Scott Fritterer. And because of that, the Panthers are in this purgatory between trying to do a rebuild and actually trying to compete on a week-in, week-out basis. You look at some of the transactions they made, the Trey Turner deal, the Teddy Bridgewater deal, even to a certain extent, I guess, Sam Darnold, that arrangement. What would be your assessment?
Yeah, I'll play devil's advocate and say that, you know, Scott Fritterer, you know, amongst the people that I talked to around the league, was an extremely well-respected evaluator, you know, personnel man, talent hound, whatever you want to call him, right? I mean, he has a nose for talent. You know, I think there was a misperception about what happened in Seattle in terms of who was calling the shots. And, you know, it's easy to look at where somebody came from and say, hey, they've had a couple tough years in the draft. Ergo, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. And I don't think that's what you're saying, but I've heard that argument before. Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that just because a team drafts makes some mistakes in the draft that it's the, you know, second lieutenant's fault. So I'm willing to give him a pass. I don't know exactly what the power structure is, but if it's the way you described, it's concerning to me. I mean, that model doesn't always work in the NFL. So figuring out the pecking order of who's making the calls on players, there has to be a buck stops here kind of guy. You know, if that's Fitterer, then we can kind of put the blame on him for future mistakes. But I'd like to see him get a shot to kind of rebuild a roster the way they did early in his tenure in Seattle.
We have a two-headed football monster we call Tool. David Tepper, Matt Rhule, Tool. We thought you might like
that. With an unusual spelling. I like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's Eric Edelm, covers NFL for Yahoo Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric_Edelm. Eric, appreciate you joining us this morning, pal. Happy holidays.
All right, thank you. You too as well. Have a great day.
All right, it's Eric Edelm joining us on the Saitama Hotline.